Because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. Excited today to have Ettore Messina with us. Coach, a true legend of coaching, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but thank you so much for taking some time with us to be able to share the game.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a big pleasure, really. Thanks a lot.
Coach, I've loved watching your clinics over the years. Well thought out concepts made simple, the pace of explanation, the directness and clarity. I'm wondering, how close are your clinics to what an actual practice session with you would look like? Would we see similar things to how you actually coach?
Yeah, there is absolutely no difference. You know, I always try to be a teacher because I love that. And I started my career coaching youth basketball for about 20 years. So that's what you get. What you get in the clinics is what you get in practices. Now, in the clinics, it's more fun because there is not the emotional part. Sometimes when you run practice, you get involved. You might be not pleased with a mistake or with a series of mistakes, or you need to push your team, or you get excited for a great play. There during a clinic is more neutral, and it's like discussing philosophically a matter with the people that are there sharing time with you in the clinic. But as a matter of content, it's exactly the same.
Such a great point, Coach. When you remove the emotion, we're much better teachers. So have you learned any strategies in your time to help yourself remove emotion in practice? Is there anything that you found helpful for you?
Everything is helpful. I think all of us can work a little bit on ourselves, talking with more experienced people, understanding when we make mistakes in that regard. I've been fortunate enough to spend 5 years with Coach Popovich. Coach Popovich is, everybody regards him as the best in the profession, and his greatness is not with X and O's, but is in his people skills. The way he always has a great feel for understanding when he needs to be more demanding or when he needs to be, let's say, more patient with the team, when the team needs support and when the team needs challenge. So just having the opportunity to be around him for 5 years in games and coaches and in practices, in coaches meetings, in dinners, it was a clinic every day. And, you know, so you try to, now it's also, that's also dangerous in some regard because you understand your limitation and you really feel you're not good enough to tell you the truth, because he is such a great teacher, coach, mentor, put everything together. But if you can steal one or two things to help you control more your emotions and run better both games and practices, it's already a huge accomplishment, I think.
What an amazing statement that is. And it's a great segue into the question. And that's, you came to the NBA as already one of the best coaches in the world. What did you learn in the NBA that you are bringing back now to Europe as you go back and you're coaching Olympia Milano? And we know you're going to be the head coach and the president of basketball operations, but let's focus on the coaching aspect. What are some things now that you bring back from the NBA to Europe?
Well, as you know, the EuroLeague now is in connection with the National League is becoming extremely demanding. You play 70 to 80 games a year, like in the NBA regular season, plus with a lot of traveling. And the schedule is becoming extremely demanding, not only the competition. So, you know, addressing the workload of the players, becoming more essential in game preparation and in using the little practice time that you have. I think this being with Pop and his staff, great experience in order to become, let's say, more efficient, I would say. Of course, a lot of things strategically, because when you prepare and coach against the Warriors or Houston or the Boston Celtics or all the great teams that you have there, or you know, I've been following very closely because of our relationship with Coach Snyder, the Utah Jazz, and it's been interesting to see how he implemented a lot of international stuff into his playbook, both defensively and offensively, all these things together. It's been an amazing experience, and I've learned a lot. And for sure, I already implement something when I coached the national team of Italy 2 years ago at the Eurobasket. And I think you can really apply a lot of the things to, of course, you need to adjust that to the different format of the game. 40 minutes are completely different from 48. So rotation-wise or the way you use the players is different. Timeouts different. Some situation, free throw situation are different. But the goaltending rule is different. But a lot of stuff you can really, you know, try to put together what I've been used for years in Europe and what I've seen in these years in the NBA.
Well, and if you can, this is the podcast to do it. Can you give us a specific example of, say, one thing? Say that example that you brought back to the Italian national team. What was one thing that transferred from the NBA to Europe or, you know, that in terms of technical, tactical?
Well, I think the most interesting part is to, I would work and I would like to work. And I did it a little bit when I had Manu Ginobili back in with Kinder in 2000, 2001. But I think that an early offense after a made field goal, it's pretty interesting to maintain a flow of the game that is not broken after a make. You walk the ball to the other end and you run a play every time. So I think that could be interesting. At the same time, because of the 40 minutes, the value of the possession is different. You know, every possession has a high value. So I understand that there is a tendency because of that to slow down a little bit the game and control a little bit more the kind of shot that you can get. Another thing that is pretty interesting is the, you know, I think in the EuroLeague has been in the years a pick and roll league like the NBA. What we've seen in the NBA, the more and more teams are trying to do what the Warriors do. Post the ball and then run a lot of splits for the shooters rather than the usual floppy action that has been the fashion for many, many years. So all these little things I think could be easily helping any kind of team. And just because I've been familiar with that, I would like to, without changing anything dramatically, but that's something that I will keep an eye on.
Well, it's fascinating. And you already talked about kind of the uniqueness of playing against different teams. Do you find that in Europe as well, that there's unique styles, or does it seem like it's a little bit more similar? Like playing against a Rockets team versus a Golden State team, very different preps, very different approaches. Is that, are you finding that similar in Europe now?
I agree with you. I think that, of course, even in Europe, there are a lot of great coaches, and all of these coaches put their trademark on their team. So you know that if you play a team coached by Zelimir Obradovic, what you're going to go at. If you find a team coached by David Blatt, it's a different style, and you have to be prepared. But because of, let's say, there is not such a huge differences among players. I mean, when you talk about Harden and Curry, two amazing players, for example, but different in their style, different the way they handle the ball and make plays for themselves and for the other players. So, of course, their teams playing, I would say, completely different. More iso ball, more ball in the hands of Harden for the Houston Rockets, more ball movement than players movement for the Warriors, if we want to generalize. I think in Europe, there is a little bit more or a little bit less differences among teams. Yeah, I would agree with you.
Well, that makes sense coming back to individual players and whatnot too. But coach, since we talked about you taking away from the NBA, what ideas do you feel you were able to bring to the NBA in terms of some of the experiences or some of the ideas that you used to obviously use to create success in Europe?
Well, I honestly have no idea if I brought anything. What I can say is that with Pop and all the other coaches at the Spurs, we've been exchanging ideas every time. And Pop is extremely open. Like, he's open to players coming from outside the United States. Even in talking with coaches outside the United States, I've seen him hosting a lot of coaches from all over the world and spending time with them just to try to, you know, maybe steal a little detail or a play or a special situation play, something like that. So, you know, I probably said some dumb things in my 5 years with the Spurs, and they've been patient because sometimes I might have come up with something that we were doing in Europe and was not effective at the NBA level. But it's been a two-way relationship all the time. And if anything has been, if at least I've been able to force a discussion or a disagreement, I'm very proud of that. But you should ask Coach Pop, of course.
Well, I would love to, Coach. That would be a great conversation as well to kind of find that out. And what I guess I'm also curious about is that, is there an idea that maybe, you know, you've sat with for a while, or one that you weren't able to get through, that you think that the NBA could adapt more of from Europe? Something that happens in Europe that doesn't happen in the NBA. Is there something that comes off the top of your head?
X and O's, no. Also because there are differences in the rules. If we talk about rules, there are two rules that I would love. One is the goaltending rules. Let the ball be touched as soon as it touches the rim. That would be, with the athleticism that we have in the NBA, it would be a lot of fun, you know, to see the ball bouncing and people go for it. It would be, I think, exciting. And on the other end, I would allow coaches to substitute a free throw shooter after he makes a free throw. That would be very important in close game situation down the stretch. You can use more offensive players and for the offense, but also bring back a great defensive player to help your defense when you go back. You know, that will give more tools to the coach to control that late game situations, I think.
Oh, that's fascinating. And maybe since we brought up the Spurs and Popovich and all that, so they seem to be one of the consistently best passing and spacing teams in basketball. Do you have some insights into why that is? Like, how do they teach it? What are they teaching for spacing, for example, that makes them so good at being able to pass? Because obviously those two things are correlated. What are some ideas for coaches?
Well, more than teaching, I think that there is the attention to that. And I think it's becoming bigger and bigger, both in Europe and in the NBA. People are more and more focusing on not letting one defender guard his man at the same time bother another defender. I give you an example. Year after year, you know, when there is the ball on the side and the ball the ball ender attack the middle and there is a shift defender, correct?
Yes.
The guy who's guarding the opposite guard is in a shift position and he helps. And more and more teams are becoming better and better at attacking that shift guy with a backdoor cut, with a catch and go off the dribble as soon as he's recovering once the pass happens. But especially the slash, the backdoor cut, the screen for the corner man, so that your defender cannot switch that because he's occupied in shifting. So you might give up an open shot on the weak side. All those criteria, starting with the idea to attack the shift or to attack a defender that wants to make it crowded, I think are becoming more and more, let's say, important in today's game, especially because with these athletes, the court is becoming smaller and smaller. If we don't think about changing the size of the court or moving the three-point line or something like that, I mean, these guys are so athletic that they can cover so much ground and they make the court smaller and smaller. And that's a problem for all offenses, I think.
Well, you said give attention to it, so emphasis. What are some things that the Spurs do or you to give attention to spacing? Is it just coaching them in the moment in practice? Is it video? Is it just constant communication? What are some things that give it attention?
I think it's a combination. I think it's, first of all, attention to details when they do their, let's say, development practices. You know, those 20, 25 minutes before practice that they work on their game, one-on-one or one-on-zero, two-on-two, two-on-zero, that's where you can talk about spacing. And you talk about how to create the spacing considering what your defender is doing and what where the ball is located on the court. Second, as you said, film. Watch film. And it's got to be, in my opinion, let's say selected film. You can't show 20 clips. You got to have 3-4 good clips so that you make the point and then you get back on the court. Of course, communication and experience. Experience that in a game. And I think the combination of all these four things can really help your team and your individuals to have a better idea of what the right spacing should be.
Well, we always hear about the Spurs development and the player development that goes on, and clearly it shows. What are some things? So you talked about they do some 1-on-0, but do they do a lot of, say, 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 or live type of offense versus defense for some of these players that they're focused on developing more than just on air with no defense? What are things that are happening in the Spurs development system?
Well, first of all, there is a plan. You know, I've been there 5 years and Chip Engelen has always been there, and he's much more than a shooting guru. He's an amazing shooting coach, but he's a great, great, I think, teacher on all the aspects of the game. It's not only the shot, but it's also tactically how you can get your shots that involves spacing, use of the screens, understanding of where the ball is moving. So it's much more than just teach how to shoot, you know. And then first part of my tenure there, it was Chad Fourcier, and then Will Hardy took over, two other great coaches about when we talk about details, you know, details and how you can shape the game of a player in order to help him to fit Pop's idea and Pop's system. That's, I think, the greatness. It's not, let's say, theory. Everything he is focused on helping the kid to be as quickly as possible inserted in the system. And then there is the thought of how to use the G League team, the Austin Spurs, in order to create playing opportunities for this kid without, let's say, losing the tie with the Spurs. You know, so it's everything. It's everything. It is very long to discuss, but there is an attention to the person and to his need and how he sees himself as a player more than wanting to impose a vision. I think this idea of really growing people before growing players, I think it's very, very important and makes a huge difference.
So is that focusing mainly on the player's strength relative to how they can eventually help and succeed in the NBA?
No, absolutely not. There is also a clear attention to what the weaknesses are that might prevent him to become a real NBA player, and then work to correct those differences, those problems, and those weaknesses, for sure.
Really good point. Pre-NBA days, what did you underappreciate about the NBA? What did you maybe not appreciate as much about the NBA before you got there?
As all the Europeans, I had the wrong impression that it was more, let's say, I wouldn't say entertainment, but the focus on toughness and competitiveness and grind was coming more towards the end of the season or in the big games and, of course, in the playoffs. Nothing more wrong than that. Starting with my first year with the Lakers about 10 years ago when I was with Mike Brown there during the lockout season and then, of course, with Coach Pop. I mean, the league is very demanding. You have to be very prepared, and the competition, especially in these days in the West, where it was always a nightmare to find the teams that were not making the playoffs, I understood how challenging is that, how hard it is for players the back-to-back, how hard it is for players the 3 and 4 nights, and, you know, how they have to dedicate a lot of time, not only on the on-court activities, but in treating them, in preparing themselves, in handling their small nagging injuries. It's watching film to be better, watch film individually, watch film as a team. I mean, it's a great league. The players and coaches are treated, I would say, amazingly in terms of conditions like traveling, arenas, organization. But, I mean, it's really demanding on the players, I think, especially. And, of course, on the coaches, too.
Of course, on the coaches. I mean, you're doing the same travel. You're doing, obviously, to a certain extent, more work. Now, when we talk about, you talked about workload management a little bit, and traditionally in Europe, you practice more. And I don't know if that's changing because obviously you're playing a lot more games in the EuroLeague, et cetera. But is there a danger in not practicing enough now in the NBA, or is it the right balance right now? And then what do you take away from that to Europe?
First of all, I can tell you about my only two experiences. And of course, with Coach Brown, we had a short season because it was the lockout season, and we need to take advantage of every situation, like shoot around or a day without games, to practice to get the team together. Coach Poppy has been handling a team where, with the exception of the last 2 years, the key players had always been the same: Tony, Tim, Manu, going back to, let's say, supporting cast like Matt Bonner. I mean, players that had been there with him, knew the system, were very efficient, were very, let's say, extremely already mentally and technically prepared. Then, of course, you change players. You bring new players in. They have to adjust to learn the system. And there's been more differences in the last 2-3 years in the roster. But all players have been extremely focusing, following the lead. And that's been extremely helpful, of course. But still, with the changes in the roster, coach has been always very careful in not overloading the team, starting with preseason. So this is something that is also going to happen in Europe. And just to give you a very, very easy example, when I was coaching in Europe years ago, still many few days a week, you had two practices because you were lifting and shooting, and then you had the team session in the evening, and there was only one game during the week. Now, most of the times, you have two games during the week, and you have very long flights. And so you end up playing four games a week. And of course, recovery has become a huge, huge factor in helping your team to perform at the right level. Small thing, back then, 10 years ago, most of the European teams were practicing in the afternoon, like 4, 5, sometimes even 6 in the afternoon. In some countries like Spain, where they usually have lunch very late in the day. So you need to know the habits and of the in that specific country. Now, for what I understand, everybody likes to practice like in the NBA around 11, 11:30, because it's more efficient, because you go there early, you do your therapy, you prepare practice, video, film, individual workout, then practice, short practice, and then everybody's done and can rest until the following day for another practice day or for a game day. So a lot of things are changing, and I think that in this regard, the two leagues are becoming closer and closer.
Very cool. Very cool. Look forward to seeing that as well. So, Coach, what did NBA coaches that you interact with, maybe what did they underappreciate about Europe? And what did they learn from you in that sense? Because I think a lot of people don't truly understand, you know, European EuroLeague basketball in the NBA circles.
Well, first of all, nobody has learned anything from me because I'm not in a situation that I can teach anything to anybody. I mean, these coaches, and seriously, the level of the coaching in the NBA, forget, of course, the head coaches. There are amazing coaches that are now assistants, and the level of preparation, it's really off the chart. And I'm not saying this to be nice to anybody. I've discussed and talked and learned a lot from my fellow assistants, both with the Spurs and talking with the other assistants from the other teams. And you can see that when you see how they prepare games, how they prepare individually the players, what the routine they go through. I mean, really high level. Now, once said that, it's also true, but this is changing because of the tones of European players that are coming here and performing. But up to a certain extent, up to a few years ago, the stereotype of the European players was that he was skilled, he could shoot, but he was not an athlete most of the times, and more important, was not that tough. That was the stereotype. Then players came and came and came, and this perception is, I would say, now it's over. I know people respect the European players, respect the ability to pass, to read the game. Of course, there is still sometimes the concern of the athleticism, okay? Because the athleticism is not the same. But overall, there is much more consideration. And you can see that 35% of the players in the NBA are international. More and more players are coming from Europe. More and more young players are drafted from Europe. So I would not say that there is a misrespect from the NBA to the international game and the European game.
Hey, Coach, just a quick interruption from the podcast. I just wanted to let you know I would love for you to join basketballimmersion.com, of course, to help support all the online sharing I do. But I don't want to interrupt these podcasts for ads anymore. From now on, ads for Basketball Immersion events and products will be at the end of the podcast. I hope you will check them out. For instance, this week I'm sharing information about our BI Training Academy in Palm Desert, California, August 12th to 16th. Go to www.basketballimmersion.com/BI Training to learn more, or listen at the end of this podcast for more information. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Well, it's great to hear, and it's come so far. And I think obviously the internet and our access to the games all over the world have made that obviously much easier to understand how good a basketball and how good a coaching there is everywhere. So that's great. Coach, you talked about the importance of the individual in the Spurs system, the importance of knowing the individual. And I'm wondering now, since rosters are so diverse in terms of where people are from. And, you know, that's not just in the US, but it's in Europe as well. And what are some things that when we talk about cultural differences or we talk about individual differences, what are some things that can help coaches better communicate, understand different players from different places?
Traveling. I was happy to read the very first thing that David Fizdale did when he signed for the Knicks, or that Coach Carlisle did when they signed Porzingis, was to go to Latvia and understand where this kid was coming from. There is nothing more than that, to go there and see what the habit is for eating, for talking, for spending the day, for practicing. Okay. So I would travel. It's simple like that. It's fun and it's a learning experience. Traveling is I think the very first tool to understand people, visiting them and understand the culture.
No, that's great. And I you know, from reading about Popovich as well, it seems like so many of his conversations with players have nothing to do with basketball. Absolutely. And that's kind of what you're alluding to there, is getting to know the person, obviously, beyond the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's very, very important for sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, Coach, I mean, let's get into a little bit of some philosophy, X's and O's wise, and different things like that. But I've been asked this frequently about, how do you marry your philosophy of defensive transition and offensive rebounding? What are some things coaches can think about marrying those two philosophies and making them, you know, a common system?
Well, you can do a lot of things. I think it depends, first of all, what kind of team you have. Because if you have a team that can really hammer the board, you will probably encourage them to go to the board. I think that also depends on the league. In Europe, you can probably be more focused on the offensive boards, because not many teams run. Most of the team, let's say, they come down the floor, they take their time, they organize their offense. There is no, they can run maybe occasionally on a block shot or a steal or a long rebound, but overall they do not pursue an up-tempo game. You don't have a good transition game in the NBA, you're done, because everybody runs and everybody pushes the ball. And if you don't have good balance on the court, it's a layup or even worse, a wide open three. So I think depends on the leagues, depends on the personnel. I personally always thought that defensively, if you can take away the transition points and the second chances points, theoretically, it's very hard for any team, including the Warriors or the Raptors, to score more than 80 points. Everybody needs fast break points, transition point, needs offensive board, second chances point, to put together those 30 points that makes a difference. That's why I always try with my team to challenge those numbers and force them to beat us only with the half-court offense. And honestly, I'll stick with that.
No, it's, and as you should. So what about ball screen defensive philosophy? There's obviously in Europe, tremendous amount of high ball screen, spread ball screen, you know, whatever you want to call it. So what is now your philosophy, having been in the NBA for the past 5 years? What has your philosophy changed in terms of your thinking and coming back, talking about defending one of the primary actions in Europe?
Oh, well, I've been exposed to a lot of teaching, to a lot of learning. I would say that pickup points are becoming more and more important, because the higher you can pick up the ball handler, the more you can sneak under on the first pick roll. I think it's important location of the screen in order to understand who is shifting, who is providing help, if he's the first line of the help, or if he's the second line, which is the lower line, to provide a bottom guy who is helping on the roller. So I think that's a question that is opening a lot of discussion depending on the location of the screen. Timing of time of when the screen happens. Of course, you might get to a point that you handle differently the screen and roll that happens in the first part of the possession and the screen and roll that happens in the second part of the possession. Theoretically, you might like to say do something standard like pushing or going over the screen and hedging, whatever, and then switch the second one when there is less time for the offense to exploit the mismatch. Then a lot of emphasis in the NBA on small pick and roll, which is not yet that big in Europe. I mean, I was at the Final Four this year, a great basketball, great teams, But if one thing that I saw was different from the NBA, less small pick and roll, less small screening action. So, you know, I think it's been a great learning experience for me to watch all those, the way all these NBA teams run pick and roll.
Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I watch a lot of European basketball, but it seems like switching is more situational than as a whole, a system philosophy. Like, you wouldn't see that many teams do what Houston did a few years ago in terms of trying to switch everything. Is that something that's going to be the next level of European basketball defensively, where there's a lot more switching?
Yes. I would say yes. Look, back then, about 10, 13 years ago, Coach Obradovic was unbelievable clever in using the switch. Unbelievable. His thing was, because after the switch, they could do a lot of things like blitzing the ball handler that was guarding by the big in order to release the big and reestablish a small matchup. But they were so aggressive, so, you know, clever, and that was amazing back then. You know, so in Europe, you have coaches that every year they come up with something new, exactly like in the NBA. And personally, I'm so happy that I've been able to learn from both culture that I think these have made me much, much better as a coach in the last 20 years.
Well, there's no doubt you've got to be one of the most studied coaches in the world with all these experiences and also the opportunity to be able to apply some of these ideas. And that's the challenge, as you know, for assistant coaches or a longtime assistants. And now you're getting back to that role where you get to apply all this stuff. So speaking to coaches who are, again, we have all this learning online. We have all these opportunities to learn. How do you actually then decide what are we going to do on defense since you now have all this new learning? What is it for you that brings it back to how do you start implementing your defensive system?
First of all, we got to put together the team. And once I define my roster, I can, you know, pick up my spot. There are some concepts that are, let's say, unnegotiable, like competitiveness, like, you know, the desire to put your body in play, fighting screens or throwing charges or whatever. There is the concept like be the best possible one-on-one defender you can. So all these things are non-negotiable. But then switch more or be more containing in a drop or ice the ball or send it to the middle. I'm honestly very flexible in that. And I think that should be really suited to the personality you have. You cannot, for example, drop the big all the time if you don't have enough size or enough, let's say, body. You probably be better hedging if you have quicker and smaller bigs and vice versa. You know, so I think it depends on that. But there are some basic principles that I was mentioning that are not negotiable, and everybody has to buy into that.
Well, and another question that kind of comes up when you start talking about non-negotiables, which I'd love to hear your answer, and that's this concept of consequences or holding players accountable to following through on those non-negotiables. What are some things in coaching that you've learned? I mean, beyond like yelling, we're beyond that as a coaching culture. Not that it doesn't happen, but what are some ways can get players to be able to hold them accountable?
I believed that when I was in Europe, and I had the highest possible confirmation of that being with the Spurs for years and seeing how in this regard, Coach Pop is extremely clear and humble when he says, team Manu and Tony, let me coach them, and David Robinson first. You need players that when you walk out of the locker room, reinforce your message, and they let everybody understand that what you said is what the team needed. And sometimes, regardless how you said that, I think it's very, very simple. I really believe in what somebody said many, many years ago, that in good teams, coaches hold players accountable, but in great teams, players hold players accountable. And I think there is nothing more true than this quote. And I always have that in my mind. And we're lucky when we find people like this, high character people. Character is such an important, I think, quality that you have to pursue in any kind of activity. And, you know, so we are lucky when we find people like that, regardless how good players they are basketball-wise.
Well, and you're speaking to a lot of levels of coaches here, but I think it's the same at all level. And that's the fact that that accountability or in players holding each other accountable, that's not natural. That just doesn't happen by magic, right?
Absolutely.
Like it's also
Absolutely.
The coach creating conditions for that to happen.
Absolutely.
And evolve. So can you talk about that a little bit? What were some things done or that you've done or the Spurs do that allow players to hold each other accountable? Because that's got to be a condition that's created.
Well, I think that, first of all, there are concepts that are basics in terms of how you would like people in your organization to relate one to the other. And, you know, depending on the organization, but respect is a major. It's easy to respect the important people and maybe lose attention towards people that are working in the shade, you know. Treat everybody the way you want to be treated. It seems silly or simple. It doesn't happen all the time. You know, get over yourself. I mean, don't take yourself too seriously. We're playing basketball. You know, we're not inventing nothing special. If you want to expect something from a teammate, first of all, you have to do your own job. You know, there are all concepts that are, I think, not only applicable to a basketball team, but to any kind of organization of people, including a family or a group of Boy Scouts that go camping together. You know, they're gonna be rules accepted, shared, and not enforced. You know, you gotta leave the rules. You know, and share those rules like important rules for the fun of the organization. And then you need to have. I think the more you go on, the more you spend energy in trying and resources in trying to understand the people you're scouting. You know, not only actually. Sometimes we get really excited with the skills, the basketball skills, and we lose track of the character. Character is probably skill number one, I would say. Unless you are ready to compromise at some level, which is respectable too. I just think that in the long term, too many compromise don't take you anywhere. You know. And historically, great traditions, great organizations with great traditions, to the question, in our organization, are more important people or principles? They usually answer principle to that question. And they might have lost some skilled people because they were not fitting the principle of the organization. But in the short term, you know, you might compromise and still have success. But in the long run, I don't think that happened.
Coach, in your role now, you're going to manage, obviously, president of operations and then head coach, mm-hmm. but even more yeah. so in your having been in the NBA, having been a head coach, I think a lot of coaches struggle with efficiency, where they spend so much time on something that maybe doesn't bring them the most benefit. Are there some insights mm-hmm. that you can provide going into you know, this new role that you have, but also to other coaches about how to balance all the different things you have to do as a coach and how to prioritize?
First of all, I would like to make clear that my position as a president of the basketball operation in Milano is going down to the basics. Very, very simple. I have kept for myself, thank you to Mr. Armani, possibility to choose the people and to have, let's say, last word on all basketball-related decision. But this doesn't mean that I will do all the job. I don't want to do it. I mean, I'm a basketball coach. That's,
you're a
that's
coach,
what
yeah.
I want. That yeah, that's what I want to be. So my first thing has been to hire a general manager, a person that I respect very much, and has been a great general manager for Olympiacos Athens for 19 years, Christos Stavropoulos. He's been with the Olympiacos for so many years. They have had amazing success with two or three Euroleagues and a lot of Greek championships and whatever. More importantly, he's a very well-respected people in Europe, when we talk about EuroLeague, the institutions, the relationship with the players' representative and whatever. So, number one, then I strengthen my staff. I have some of the coaches there I've been working with, I know and respect them. I added a fellow coach from the United States, and I think he will be very helpful. We set up all the office. I think once you put everybody in place, now you can refocus on basketball. I think it's important to delegate. I think it's important to trust and build trusting relationship with the people that you work with. And of course, the opportunity to choose my own people, it's huge. It's something that I wanted to do. I wanted to take the challenge, but with the people that I wanted to go to war to and together. And so here we are. But I don't think you could do all this, you know, change continuously your head during the day and during the week. I think it wouldn't work. I think it's not only a matter of efficiency, but it's a matter of what you're capable to do. I hope I am a decent coach and I want to be a coach. That's it.
That's great. And maybe taking that a little further, is there, and I'll give you maybe a specific example. As a young coach, maybe you watched 7 games to get ready for an opponent, but as you get more efficient and you've obviously, you know, seen more games and you see, recognize patterns quicker, maybe you only watch 3 games to get ready as a coach. Again, not a specific example, but just the one there. But
let me just make an example. First of all, you can coach against the team attacking their tendencies or attacking their plays, just to make an example. To attack their tendencies seems more complicated, but at the end of the day, it's easier and requires less time, and I think prepares you better. While preparing against a lot of plays that team runs, wastes a lot of energy, requires a lot of a fake attention. When I say fake attention, I mean that if they change the play, you might get screwed because you're prepared against that play, you know? While if you learn how to understand their principles and who they go to down the stretch when it's really important, now that helps your preparation and makes you more efficient. Same thing in anything else. You know, I don't think you need so many games to get a feel for an opponent, you know, and to get to know their tendencies. While you might get paranoid and watch a lot of film because you want to know all the plays that they do. But that's not what will help you to win, I think, because your players sometimes have a hard time to understand and keep running well your own plays. Figure about the opponent plays. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be prepared in that regard, but tendencies are much more important. And in the same token, there are a lot of other situations where, you know, you can really sum up what is the basics that you want to be prepared or that you want to do, and then in case you add something else.
Well, and that's exactly what I was getting at. So that's a great example, because we've heard that about the Spurs, that the focus is on your team. It's on the Spurs more than the opponent, and that you don't do as much scouting as sometimes coaches are obsessed with. And I love hearing that example.
Listen, Coach Pop, people think that Coach Pop lies or jokes when he says that until he gets to the playoff, he never watches the opponent. That's exactly the truth. He keeps watching. He keeps watching his own team. If he watches film, it's about the Spurs. Then when playoff, and he trusts us, the assistants, to help him with the preparation, watching the opponent. That's how it is. And no fake, you know, no fake news. That's exactly what he does. And that's how he teaches, and that's how he grows his own team, focusing on our team rather than focusing to destroy the other team.
And so that's reflected in obviously everything he does throughout the season. And like, he speaks about only the Spurs. Does he speak about the opponent, or is that the assistant coach's responsibilities?
That's assistant coach's responsibility. And of course, before the game, he comes in and says, you know, he addresses a couple of big topics, but the preparation is, and more than the preparation, I would say the philosophy is know better yourself. You know, the more you know about yourself and the more you improve yourself, you know, that will help you to perform at the highest possible level.
And you kind of alluded to that, but is that advice for a young coach to know yourself, focus more on yourself and your team than the opponent?
Chris, if you allow me to joke about that, Socrates, the Greek philosopher, thousands of years ago, was the first who said that, you know, know yourself. Know yourself. Gnosete ipsum was in Greek, you know, in Greek language. And
it's awesome. But it's a big leap of faith for a young coach, isn't it? Because we've been ingrained with, oh, you got to be so prepared. You got to be so prepared. And we're not saying don't be prepared, but we're saying prepare your team instead of the other team. Right. And I think coaches need to hear that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, and again, it's because, you know, if you go deeper in analyzing who you are and how you can get better, and, you know, that helps a lot, you know, and you'll be better. You'll be better. You know, there is no, you will grow up. You will grow up for sure.
Well, I think the other thing is coaches dismiss it and say, oh, well, Popovich can do this because he's had all this success and he's got NBA players. But really, again, this applies at all levels of coaching, right? Focus more on your team.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Coach, thank you so much. So grateful for you to share the game and spend some time with us. Thanks for taking some time.
It's been an honor and a privilege, seriously, much more than what we usually say, the formal part. I really mean that. Thank you so much for taking time to call me.
Amazing. Coach, yes, I will hit you up on WhatsApp or email, and I'll let you know where I'm in, but I will be there all the time. So I look forward to connecting.
Do me a favor. When you publish this, send me the link, please, okay?
100%, Coach. I will send you all the information. All right, take care.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, Coach. I want to share with you something I'm so happy to finally be opening up. It's our basketball immersion training, or BI training. We were doing a live 5-day training camp specifically for college and pro players. It's taking place in my new hometown of Palm Desert, California, and the closest airport is PSP, or Palm Springs Airport. This location is just 2 hours from LAX and is a beautiful spot to learn a games approach and to improve decision making. I've had many coaches ask me over and over how to develop players and train decision making in the off season. Well, here it is, a 5-day player development academy in Palm Desert, California, August 12th to 16th, 2019. I'm running this basketball immersion training for your players to attend and learn through 8 on-court sessions, 3 video sessions, and group training practices like you've never seen before. You know my love for random practice and transferring skills to games, and these training sessions will be run with a player development focus. This is a full week of me teaching players to be their own coach and to make your life even easier. Come learn for yourself how to best teach your players to make better decisions through group off-season decision training. Send this link to your players ASAP, www.basketballimmersion.com/BI training. Come join me for a 5-day player development academy in Palm Desert, California, August 12th to 16th, 2019. Hurry, spots are limited. To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.